good thing is, I've never pulled so many birds in all my life since the peel. The bad news is I've just fired the chauffeur because there's not enough room for both of us. But what it does do, actually, I suppose it does demonstrate the kind of creativity that one can have. And I think a lot of people that I come across from a sustainability point of view who are entrepreneurs are always desperately trying to think of what is that next invention. And what this illustrates is you don't always have to find something new. To me, in business, so often the things already exist. What we've got to do is do them smarter, cleaner, and more efficiently. And in my own business background, literally over the last 25 years, the one thing that is consistent throughout my background is I'm not an inventor. I've never created or designed anything. But actually, I'm always looking for something that's already out there. So if you look, for the sake of argument, at EasyJet, the plane already existed. Air travel was already out there. What they did really was take an existing model and made it more effective, more efficient, more profitable. And I think business could and should play a greater role, I think, in sustainability. But I think what it needs is young people who've got that more natural concept of ideas, of creativity. But I think consistently what people do, they sit there and they think, I've got to find the next big thing. What is that next idea? And I think a lot of people, maybe like myself, if you're not naturally creative or somebody who's going to come up with that next business plan, you may feel actually that you're not included in that journey. Whereas in fact, actually, I look at it differently. I'm not looking for the next, cat size. Because if you take, for example, the peel car, it was invented in 1960. It already exists. It was actually there. But these two guys took the idea and said, right now, sustainability is on the top of the agenda. The electric car is becoming popular, and the fact that this is small, I mean, already Ripley's, that the museums have taken 12 of these cars, and we're getting 15 million people going into the museums actually interested in the car. And since it's been on Dragon's Den, we've got so many people who are looking to kind of either brand it or buy it and use it as promotional purposes. So more and more you will see people coming in with ideas, and I think a lot of the exhibitions nowadays, the competitions, there are more and more people coming up with ideas that already exist. Recently, I chaired something called the iAwards, which was the Innovation for Technology Science. And it was amazing that the people who submitted some of the ideas where you could charge a laptop or a mobile phone using solar power, solar energy. The key thing I will say is I think the one thing people from an entrepreneurial perspective consistently get is it still has to make business sense. So many people who come onto Dragon's Den have got an idea and their entire focus is it's the environment, it will change the world. But if it doesn't make any money, it will never take off. Because you have to remember, it's equal in terms of its commercial value and its impact on the environment. And so many ideas I think people invest so much time into, but then realize that to make it environmentally free, commercially makes it too expensive. And therefore, I think what happens is when you ask the consumer, you can either have something, for the sake of argument, $6.95 that's conventional, or $9.95 but it's environmentally free. Generally speaking, I'm not convinced today the consumer has got himself excited enough to justify paying a 50% premium. And therefore, from an investment perspective, I'm always saying to entrepreneurs, it has to be compatible. So you've got to focus on making sure that it has to appeal to the current marketplace. I think there are people out there who will pay a premium, but as an entrepreneur, I think the percentage is too small. You may have 15 or 20%, which means commercially it's not going to have as much volume as a conventional product does. So when you're out there looking at these opportunities or you're coming up with ideas, do not compromise on its commercial impact, because I genuinely believe it is just as important to make the business itself viable. Recently, I came back from a trip from Pakistan, and for me, it really kind of illustrated the responsibility I think that we have as a global community, the impact on climate change today. I think Pakistan, for me, was just the most incredible example of what the current weather patterns around the world are causing. Those floods currently today have literally devastated a country the size of Britain. So when you look at some other events, it could be the tsunami or the earthquake or Haiti, These are quite small geographical areas. The floods in Pakistan, the landmass that was covered was literally the size of Italy. There's 20 million people who've lost their homes, lost their lives, and pretty much lost everything. That disaster, for certainly from what I've seen, has been the biggest catastrophic disaster I've ever seen. And if you look at it, literally for some strange reason nowadays, every few years something devastating is happening. And to me, my own response to that is I think nature is screaming at us, reminding us of the damage that we're doing. And the thing that I find incredible is for some strange reason, we're still not listening. And when you look at the effects of Haiti, or you look at the tsunami, or you look at the earthquake, or you look at Pakistan, to me, there is clearly something that's not right. Because years ago, those kind of devastation didn't happen as frequently as they're happening now. And I think there are, you know, and a lot of people constantly say, if I stop driving or if I just grow a tree, will I really make a difference? And I think for most of my business life, interesting enough, I've shared the same view, that if there are 6 million people in Pakistan who are not being educated, the argument is, if I educate one person, what difference has it really made? Am I really going to make a difference? And for years and years, that mindset meant that I did nothing. Because most of these issues are so big that we always look at them and say, does it really make a difference? And a few years ago, I was thinking about building a school in Pakistan, and somebody said the same thing to me and said, James, all that time and effort, you're going to build a school, there are millions of people, what difference are you really going to make? And I'm sitting there almost pondering, should I, shouldn't I do it? And I spoke to a friend of mine and she said, you know, if you look at that, if Nelson Mandela took that view and said there are 40 million, you know, Africans in Africa, what is one person going to do? You know, he may not change the face of Africa. If Gandhi hadn't decided that he wanted to take India back in control, you know, world history may have changed. And actually, the truth of the matter is, it's really accepting the principle that one person can make a difference to the world. And I think, for me, that was the kind of changing point in my life when I realized that actually I shouldn't be the guy sitting on a fence saying, what can I really do? Actually believing that one individual can make a difference. And since that day, 2004, I now don't sit there watching TV and say, oh my God, what's somebody gonna do? Oh my God, the government, what are they doing? Oh my God, why are people in Pakistan not responding? The first question I ask myself is, what am I doing? Because I think you have to start with yourself. And when I watched those devastating floods in Pakistan, it encouraged me to ask the same question, to say, what am I actually doing myself? And as a result of that, my next step was to go get on a plane, get out there, and understand for myself, what are these people really going through? Because I think sometimes, unless you experience it and you see it for yourself, it's very difficult to come up with, you know, what can I really do? And as I arrived, I was absolutely blown away because the concept of 20 million people, that scale, I think is beyond imagination. You can't realize that until you're there. And as I walked into some of these villages in 47 degrees of heat, looking at their faces and just seeing the fact that if you imagine, if your own home has been completely destroyed, that means you've lost everything, your clothes, your cooking utensils, your food, your furniture, your money. So you actually have nothing. And literally they're sitting in a camp and all they have is the clothes on their body. They have no money, they have no food. And as I'm walking around, they're literally sitting there on roadsides waiting for that next aid truck to come along. And almost we've turned these people into kind of beggars. And I went to a particular place where it was under a flyover because it was so heat. And there was literally 1,000 people crowded and huddling under this bridge. And as I arrived with the camera crew from ITV, as they saw the car, they literally attacked this car because they thought food was arriving. For once, I didn't realise actually I was at lunch there. But anyway, the car turned up and we get literally this crowd. And the ITV crew said, whatever we do, we can't stop, it's too dangerous. I said, now I'm here now, I actually want to talk to some of these people. And so we got out of the car and all these people huddled around and they had this voucher in their hand. And I think one of the aid agencies had come out and given them this voucher to say, we're going to be back today with the food. Anyway, all day, Saturday, nobody turned up. Sunday, another day, an entire day. Bear in mind, there are children, women, old people. So two full days, no water, no food. So we turn up on the Monday afternoon, so which is why they were so desperate. And when I saw the look in their faces, I mean, it was just almost scary, because if I was them, I would have bugged me, because they were that desperate, not having food or water. Anyway, as a result of that, I thought, my God, I need to do something. So literally, I went into the next village and walked into every shop and said, you know, how much bread do you have? And he said, 40 loaves. I said, actually, I need 1,000 loaves, because I'm going to go back and feed those 1,000 families. But I couldn't buy enough food. So literally, got that shopkeeper to say, look, why don't you go around and collect as much bread as you can? Went to the next shop, bought rice and then oil and then cooking rice and flour, etc. And literally did shopping enough for 1,000 families. Hired a truck, hired 20 people to then physically go back and hand out some of this aid to those people, which I would never have done if I was sitting in London watching TV. And interestingly enough, it doesn't cost a fortune. It was £1.50 to feed a family for a day. So whether it's a £5 or £10, it doesn't really matter. But I think it's that humanitarian conscience that says we want to do something, and we can do something, and we can make a difference. And I think, to me, the principle of sustainability is that core message. You know, clearly right now, the planet is being affected. I think we are being a tad irresponsible. And it takes every individual, whether it's packaging, whether it's fuel, whether it's efficiency, there are hundreds of examples of things that we can do. The question is, we shouldn't sit there by saying what I did for most of my grown-up life, which is, what difference does it make? I think it's recognising and it's turning that trend to say, as long as I do my bit, as long as I can have a conscience that says, I'm not prepared to accept this, I think as a society, as a global community, we will make a difference. And I think, in a way, the fact that I went out there and then got it covered on TV, there were hundreds of people all over the country today who were having events and sponsoring events and fundraising events. And next thing you know, we might raise 50 million, 100 million, it could be a billion, because that's how these things start. My plan is to go back at the end of this month. Having given food, I want to go back now. One of the villages that I saw, literally left a bit of a scar in my head, because I just couldn't believe how an entire community had been displaced. And ever since I've been back, I've been quite motivated about doing something, and I've decided that what I really want to do is I want to go back and actually build a village and give those people back their dignity and give them back their lives, which, if they have nowhere to live, essentially their life is destined to be living in a camp because they have no money to rebuild their homes. So the plan is to go back at the end of this month and actually take a team of people with me, and I'm actually going to rebuild the entire village. And I made an announcement on radio, and since then 14 people have approached me and said, when you go out there, James, I'd also like to build a village. So on an average village, it's 1,000 people. So I've got enough now for 14,000 people. My target is to get it to 100,000 people, if I can give back the lives of those people. But it took one individual to come up with the idea. And I think really my message to you today, as young people, is to get to that level of conviction. Firstly, accept the fact that if we do nothing, the devastation, I think, over the next 50 to 100 years, whether it's your lives, the lives of your children, or the lives of the global community, genuinely, in my opinion, will be affected. And I think if you can cross that bridge and get over the problem, I suppose, that I had, which was questioning, will I make a difference? But when somebody sees you do it, the impact of that that has on other people, because other people notice and say, actually, do you know what, that's quite amazing that X is doing Y, maybe I should do something. And in a way, I've noticed in business and things that I've done, that getting other people behind you, and next thing you know, it's amazing the things and the transformation that you can achieve. So I suppose my core message to you is really, I think as young people today, you are part of the future. I think you are the answer, because clearly a lot of grown-ups intellectually think that they can't embrace technology. They've got to a point they can't make a difference. I think as society, we are now dependent, without a question of doubt, the youth of tomorrow to really take that responsibility. So really, it's in your hand. You can make a difference. And the key thing you've got to remember is, don't worry about what somebody else is doing. Always ask yourself the first question, what am I doing? On that note, have a lovely day. Thank you very much indeed.